I'll tell you what, if you squint a little bit and tilt your head just right, you can see that inflation is slowing down. Kinda. From American Public Media, this is Market Class. In Washington, D.C. today, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, the 11th of May. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. Inflation is, to be clear, slowing down. It is also, to be clear, spiking a little bit, too. In the April Consumer Price Index that we got this morning, were these not necessarily contradictory data points? Year over year, consumer prices in this economy were up 8.3% in April from a year earlier. That is just a touch lower than the March reading. Month to month, though, this March to this April, core CPI, that is, of course, without food and energy, was up 0.6%, so about double the reading from a month ago. Now, what is one to make of that? Maybe inflation has peaked. Maybe it hasn't. One thing, though, is for darn sure, consumers are getting more than a little bit freaked out. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
The rate of price increases may be plateauing, but Americans' anxiety about inflation has been escalating. Jeff Jones at Gallup cites the firm's latest opinion poll.
The most important financial problem facing their family, they say inflation by a wide margin. 32% say inflation is the most important financial problem facing their country. That's up from 8% a year ago.
And after months of sharply rising prices, higher inflation expectations are settling in. The latest survey from the New York Fed finds consumers anticipate inflation will still be running above 6% a year from now.
The pressure consumers are feeling appears to be pretty consistent and pretty high.
Chris Jackson is with polling firm Ipsos.
People are continuing to expect price increases through at least the near future. And maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. Americans are not economists. They're just sort of responding to what's in front of them and expecting it to continue.
Higher income consumers express the most worry about inflation right now, but it's folks lower down on the income scale who are most vulnerable to continued high inflation as their basic monthly expenses go up and they deplete their savings to pay for them. Consumers are starting to change how they spend, says Spencer Baird at data analytics firm Inmar Intelligence. They're being more methodical and price conscious.
54% of shoppers right now are saying that they're trying different brands and they're trying different retail shops.
Consumer spending hasn't fallen yet, but Chris Jackson says given the level of anxiety, people may start pulling back on
things that are relatively easy discretionary purchases, you know, going out to eat, socializing with friends, to things like if you have to replace a car or appliance in your house.
And that kind of pullback in consumer spending will impact retailers, consumer product companies, and ultimately their employees. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, down, down, and down across the major indices. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. In what may well turn out to be an annual event, the second global COVID-19 summit is tomorrow, the United States co-hosting. One of the main focuses of that meeting is to get more money funneled toward getting vaccines and tests and treatment to low-income countries. Marketplace's Samantha Fields is on the Show Me the Money desk today.
This time last year, vaccines were rolling out and there was not enough supply to meet global demand. Today,
our supply has finally caught up to where we are.
Krishna Udaikumar is with the Duke Global Health Innovation Center.
So the challenges we were dealing with 6 months ago of ramping up supply has evolved to a current challenge, which is all about distribution, delivery, and demand generation.
Especially in low-income countries. So far, Josh Michaud at the Kaiser Family Foundation says only about 15% of people in developing countries have been vaccinated.
Getting vaccines into arms has been really hard for the global community to do.
Because there are a lot of logistics that still need to be figured out.
things like buy the freezers and train people to do the vaccinations and build the supply chains necessary to make this work.
All of that costs money. The global effort that the WHO is leading asked for about $6 billion in funding for vaccination for this year. So far, governments around the world have only pledged about $1 billion of that. And there is even less funding for COVID testing and antiviral treatments. Zane Rizvi is with the consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen.
The authorization of the new antivirals is a game changer. But frankly, the game has only been changed in a handful of high-income countries, while the rest of the world lags behind.
He says the countries where most people still don't have access to vaccines are also the least likely to have access to treatment. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Airbnb announced some upgrades today, changes that are supposed to make it easier to search for the kind of place you want to stay and to split up long stays, for instance. It's all about the company trying to capitalize on the new ways that people are traveling. Bookings lasting 28 days or longer, Airbnb says, have doubled since 2019 as people mix travel with working remotely. People like co-founder and CEO Brian Chesky, who said earlier this year that he is going to be living in and working from Airbnbs all over the place.
Because I don't have to be in an office 5 days a week.
We were on a Zoom the other day. He and I were, me in LA, him, of course, from an Airbnb in New York City.
I'm 40. I live with nothing but a golden retriever. So she's got flexibility. I've got flexibility. And I figured life's short. I want to see a little more of the country. And so for the last 4 months, I've hopped around. I've stayed in probably a dozen Airbnbs and saw a bunch of the country. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. So there's a lot to unpack there. But first of all, how's the dog doing? How does she like moving every couple of weeks?
She seems to like it. You know, I do my best to communicate. We pick homes with yards. She likes it. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, it's been a great experience.
Are you booking your own stays through the app or do you have people who do that for you?
I book it, and I don't tell them who I am, although I don't use a pseudonym either. And so I'd say half the time they figure out it's me, half the time they don't.
Huh.
And it's great because you kind of see all the good and occasionally not as good about your product, and that's exactly how you get the feedback. And I also just think that like anecdotes and firsthand experiences are often more more helpful than just data alone.
I want to get to the announcement you made last week about Airbnb people being able to be full-time remote in a second. But I want to back you up for a minute to the beginning of this pandemic when you and this company had what has to be an existential crisis. And I'd like you to reflect for a second on here you are 2 years later and it looks like you made it. How'd you do that?
Oh, God. Well, Kai, let me just first say I'm 40 years old, but I feel like I'm going on 50 or 60 after the last 2 years.
I bet.
You know, I've been lucky in my life never to have had a near-death experience. I've heard them described to me as like your kind of life flashes before your eyes. And sometimes people describe that experience as giving them clarity. I certainly had what felt like a near-death business experience because our business dropped 80% in 8 weeks. And by the way, when your business drops 80% in 8 weeks, you don't know if that's the end or not. Like it could have dropped by 99%. And it was like an 18-wheeler on a highway going 80 miles an hour and then you slam on the brakes. It's very traumatic. And I kind of remember March 15th, and that's the Ides of March, we had a board meeting. And after the board meeting, I had a board member call me and he was a former CEO of Amex. And he said, you know, this is your defining moment as a CEO. And it was kind of like this bell in my head just rung. And I just kind of, yes, this is it. This is the moment of truth for me. And this is the moment of truth for the company. And we kind of got in the foxhole and we kind of rebuilt the company from the ground up. We had to make a lot of painful decisions. We laid off 1,900 people. Mm-hmm. We shuttered most of our new initiatives. And something remarkable happened. People, even though they weren't crossing borders and they weren't traveling for business, they were getting in their cars and they were traveling a tank of gas from their house to stay in Airbnbs. And we were able to pivot the product to take advantage of that opportunity. And I guess you could say we never looked back after that.
You know, I mentioned that we're on a Zoom, which I don't usually do, and I don't usually see the people I interview. It's interesting that during that whole answer, your head was down, you were scratching your forehead, you weren't looking up. It was just interesting to see.
Well, I will tell you that there's a lot of emotions that flood my mind as I think about that period. I mean, both good and painful. You know, it was the most defining year, 2020, in my life. And I didn't think that would be possible after starting Airbnb. I kind of told myself at the time, like, this is the craziest thing I'll ever go through. Little did I know what was in store for me in 2020.
All right, super quick, couple of more things, and then I'll let you get back to running the company. Big announcement from you guys last week. Everybody at Airbnb can be remote wherever they want for as long as they want. You know, there are going to be some in-person gatherings, but basically, wherever you want to live and work, you can live and work there. A reasonable decision for you as a CEO of a company, I imagine, because that's what people want now, but also a reasonable decision for you as the CEO of Airbnb, for whom this future workforce is tailor-made.
100%. I mean, listen, there were two reasons I did this. One, because it benefits our business to do this. If we can embrace remote work and more people are living and working Airbnbs, and then we can popularize this for other companies, that's good for our business. But I will tell you, if we didn't benefit at all, I still would have done it. Because number one, we had the most productive 2 years in our history while working remotely. Mm-hmm. Point two, I generally like to predict the future by not looking at what bigger or mature companies do, but what young companies do. 20 years ago, it was young Silicon Valley startups that popularized open floor plans, you know, in-person like perks and all those different perks. And I think if you look at the young companies today, they're embracing flexibility and remote work. And the third thing is, it just seems like the best people now live everywhere. I think the best people aren't just in Silicon Valley. And we decided, let's not lower people's pay if they move from San Francisco to Ohio. Let's just try to be a little more ahead of the curve here.
Well, so about that pay thing, which is the other thing I wanted to ask you. So that's great for Airbnb workers, but what do you say to somebody in, you know, Ottumwa, Iowa, who's trying to buy a house or whatever, and you got people coming in making Airbnb Silicon Valley salaries when that's not the prevailing wage in that area? I mean, that seems to be a challenge and doesn't do much for the other parts of this economy besides Airbnb.
Well, actually, I can't speak for every city, but I think a lot of cities and a lot of mayors would like to have high-wage workers and high-tech people come into their city. They patron, they can provide more revenue for their markets. I will also say, I don't think they're going to be flooding any one area. What we've generally seen with our data on Airbnb is there's this mass population redistribution. It used to be that people were really concentrated in certain cities, San Francisco, New York, you know, LA. And now they're kind of spreading out to thousands of towns and communities. But I also think cities can decide based on their own policies who they want to live there and who they don't.
Do you think you're, you're a big name company and you're a big name guy. Do you think you're setting a trend here now for this fully remote workforce?
Maybe setting a trend is a slight overstatement, but I do think we're popularizing or accelerating a trend. I mean, certainly, like, we weren't the first company to announce this. In fact, we're probably, like, there's so many companies that have made announcements. I think our announcement got more attention than most. And I'll just give you one new stat, Kai. Since we made that announcement, we've had more than 1 million visits to our careers and jobs page. Now, we only have 6,000 employees, and we're not hiring that many people. So I don't know. I think this is just an indication that we tapped into something, that this is what the people want. And I think this is inevitable because I think after compensation, flexibility will probably be the most important benefit that employers will be giving to employees. That's my prediction.
Brian Chesky, he founded, co-founded, and now runs Airbnb. Brian, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Coming up,
we're like, okay, are we going to do this or not?
Well, are you? Are you? I don't know. First, though, let's do the numbers. Ooh, the Wawas. All right, okay. NASDAQ sold off 373 points today, about 3.1%. 11,364. NASDAQ way, way down from its recent high. The S&P 500 off 65 points, about 1.6%. 39 and 35. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 326. That's points 1%, 31,834. Jump in the cost of raw materials is the reason Toyota gives for forecasting a possible 20% dip in profits. That's for the current quarter. Toyota shares down 5.5%. If you drive your Toyota Camry over to Wendy's to scarf a Baconator, first of all, why? But second of all, you will arrive at another place where higher costs are taking a bite. The fast food chain is blaming the cost of supplies and labor for missing expectations on sales and profits. Wendy's slumped 11.2%. I'm kidding, by the way. Baconators are probably delicious. Bonds up. Yield on the 10-year T-note down at 2.93%. You're listening to Market Play. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Treasury Department has a pretty regular schedule for bond auctions, borrowing money in the credit markets to fund the federal debt. Today, it was 10-year Treasury notes that went at an average yield. Remember, that's the interest rate that bonds and notes pay, of 2.94%. Y'all know that we talk about the 10-year all the time because it's the benchmark for a whole lot of things in this economy, including how much it costs to borrow money for college. The federal government issues around $90 billion worth of student loans every year, and the interest rate on those loans is set in July of each year, based directly on today's auction. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes explains what's going on.
Congress established a formula to tie student loan interest rates directly to the yield on the 10-year Treasury note back in 2013.
Prior to that, Congress just kind of made up an interest rate, believe it or not.
Jason Delisle studies higher education as a senior policy fellow at the Urban Institute. He says after the 2008 housing crisis and recession, an interest rate that didn't change felt out of sync with the markets.
People were saying at the time, you know, why can't this work like mortgages? So that was the idea. Okay, so a 10-year treasury plus about 2 percentage points, at least for undergrads, that's the system, gets you pretty close to what a mortgage rate is.
So, in the current system, the interest rate for new federal student loans changes every July. For undergraduate loans, the government takes the yield from today's auction and adds about 2 percentage points. Graduate students and parents have a higher markup, and when the yield on the 10-year goes up, like it did today, it'll cost new borrowers more. Mark Huelsman is with the Hope Center for College, Community, and Justice at Temple University.
They're going to be paying, you know, in some cases, thousands of more dollars on their debt than students who went to school maybe last year or a couple years ago.
Right now, there's a pause on student loan payments, which means people aren't required to make any, and no interest is accruing. That pause is set to end on August 31st, which means students will need to think about how they'll pay back their debt, and maybe how much they want to take on in the first place. Catherine Hill is with the education nonprofit Ithaca SNR.
There's certain professions that just the labor market just doesn't compensate you very well for those jobs.
Hill says if students want to do those jobs or if they don't know what they're going to do, they shouldn't borrow a huge amount of money because it could be difficult to pay it back. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
We've spent a lot of time on the program today doing what we always do, putting economic numbers in context. So it is in that spirit that we kick off this next story with a number, 2,488. That is people, which might be an overflow crowd at, I don't know, say a bar mitzvah, but it is a very, very small number of fans at a Major League Baseball game. But 24-48 was, in fact, paid attendance on a recent Monday night at the Oakland Coliseum, where the Oakland A's hosted the Tampa Bay Rays, and where A's attendance this season has fallen to 40-year lows. Matt Levin was there and explains why some of the A's faithful think lousy attendance is exactly what the team is looking for.
Water, peanuts, cracking jacks!
You'd think such a small crowd in a baseball stadium would feel kind of sad. But there are perks, like you don't have to sit right behind home plate to hear the umpire. Oh! If you're into heckling the players, you know they can hear you.
Hey, Ramirez! You're a weenie!
If you generally want a quieter baseball experience, an A's game in 2022 is right up your alley. Just don't sit in right field.
I love the cowbell. Did you pick that out yourself?
Yeah, I like the noise, but I'm getting deaf, so I have my lugs.
Esperanza Urena is a member of the Oakland 68s. They're basically an A's fan club slash percussion section. The A's moved to Oakland in 1968.
It's kind of my social kind of community because I come by myself because my children are gone.
That community runs about 20 deep at tonight's game. The Oakland 68's conductor is Jorge Leon.
So yeah, so then we have different drum beats for all the different ball A's players. But we had to create new ones because obviously
the A's traded away the all-stars and fan favorites that helped the team make the playoffs just 2 years ago. Leon is 37, comes to just about every game. He says it's not just the roster teardown that's driving attendance to such absurd lows. A's fans are used to that, the whole Moneyball thing. It's the A's trading all their good players, then raising his ticket prices 35%, all while threatening to leave Oakland. It feels like they don't want him there.
The last day that we could renew our season tickets, we were like, okay, are we going to do this or not? Part of our mindset was like, Fisher's doing this on purpose, so no one comes, right?
Fisher is John Fisher, the billionaire owner of the A's. Dave Cavill is the A's president, who swears the team is not trying to keep fans away.
The thing is we don't need to do that to relocate. That might have been true before the league gave us authorization on Las Vegas. And then it would have been a totally sensible plan, maybe.
Major League Baseball gave the A's the okay to flirt with Vegas to pressure the city of Oakland into helping them build a new ballpark. Something more fan-friendly and less feline-friendly.
I see the feral cats almost every day. I see the cats. I see the kittens. I see calico cats. I see tortoiseshell cats.
Beyond a roaming colony of feral cats, the 66-year-old Coliseum has had sewage problems and lighting problems and used to have vermin problems, I guess before the cats moved in. The A's want a $12 billion waterfront ballpark development, complete with hotels and restaurants and housing. Opponents say it'll interfere with the Oakland port and make gentrification worse. Cavill says if the A's don't get the stadium, they're gone. It's not a new threat. Jorge Leon has the memorabilia to prove it.
So we have one of the classic ones. This is a Keep Our A's in Oakland banner. This is from, I want to say, like 1998, 99.
The city has changed a lot since then. It's richer, more expensive, more gentrified. But the Raiders, the football team, left for Vegas. The Warriors, the basketball team, left for San Francisco. Leon wants the new fancy stadium. It's the only way the A's stick around. But he'll miss the Coliseum, warts and all. He grew up near the stadium, met his wife there.
Playing baseball and hanging out with your friends and your crew. I mean, that's why to me it's the most beautiful place. I don't need the fancy stuff that goes on in ballparks.
Hot dogs, hot churros.
Back at the ballpark, where the A's are in the process of losing to Tampa, 9-year-old Harrison Stone is having a great time enjoying those simpler things.
How many balls have you gotten today?
Four foul balls. Probably because there's like no one here.
Actually, two foul balls and two balls thrown to him from an outfielder with obviously limited options. Ask any baseball fan, that's a great haul. Stone says he's an A's fan, but he's not local.
We're from Las Vegas.
You're from Las Vegas.
It's harder to get foul balls at Aviators games. They're the minor league team the A's have in Vegas. This year, they draw more fans than the A's do sometimes. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Thank you. This final note on the way out today, 30 seconds or so on some of the details of this morning's inflation report, just because I think the level of specificity this stuff gets into is kind of interesting. In the food category, fresh biscuits, rolls, and muffins, prices down 0.2% March to April. Cakes, cupcakes, and cookies, though, up 0.9%. Go figure that one out. In apparel, men's suits, sport coats, and outerwear up 6.6%. Women's suits and separates down 2.3%. I could go on, but you get the idea. Pretty much everything in this economy is measured. All right, we're out of here, but not without your moment of economic context, for which the preface has to be please, 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 please consult your own financial advisor. Bitcoin today, $29,000 off 20% the past 5 days. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.